Have you ever been to a church service before where they served you steak and eggs for breakfast? I think not, my friends. Can we just give it up for our events team, which put all that on? So good. Delicious. They brought me a little sampling backstage, and I was kind of like scribbling on my notes, and I was like, I'll just take a little taste. And it was the sort of thing where I popped a piece of steak in, and I was like, okay, hold on. I forgot what I was doing, where I was. You know, I just kind of went somewhere else in my head. And, the, you know, all the tables, there's cool stuff on them, and these stumps, which make me feel manly. Am I the only guy that every time you see a stump, it feels like you need to stand like this on it and just survey something? Even if there's nothing to survey. And I want to take that axe out and play with it, but we both know I'll cut myself. So I don't want to do that. So we're gonna jump in this morning. I'm really excited about what we have to talk about. And I want to encourage you to take notes today. It's okay to get a little campfire sauce on the note sheets. That's fine. As long as you're going to want to write down some things just to kind of keep with you and hold in your memory. And so there should be some note sheets on your table, some pens there. And if you can't find one, just grab a stick or some bark off one of these stumps and just write with sauce, however you need to get it down. So the title of my message is this today, When the Rock Drops. When the Rock Drops. Not the rock like, can you smell what the rock is cooking? Like, not that, Hercules, not all that, but like an actual physical rock, when the rock drops. So for those of you that don't know, I'm actually a dad, and I have three kids, and I brought a picture of them. This is what my kids look like right here. Some of you are laughing because you know my children, and this is a pretty good representation of the three of them. Tegan is wearing a dress, but then making a weird face and all that kind of stuff, clearly elbowing her brother in the head, who's very nice and sweet if you know Cohen, and he's also very orderly. When I was like, make a funny face, that's the best he's got. Like, he doesn't do funny faces. He does math homework books for summer fun. You know, the other kids are like, let's build something out of Legos. And he's like, do we have homework books? Gandalf. You know what I mean? He's just kind of, that's just him. And we'll all be living off him someday. So don't tell him I said that. He's smarter than me already. And he's like five. So, and then there's Zeke down in the corner who's just small and kooky. I'm not really sure what he's doing, but I'm enjoying it. So these are my kids, and we like to do a lot of stuff together. One of the things we've always loved doing together is going on hikes. And so we love just to go out in nature and just walk around and climb a mountain or go down by the beach or explore caves in Laguna. We just kind of like to go out in nature and just goof around, walk around, and explore a little bit. And when we're walking around, one of the things my kids do is they just collect things, okay? And you should know this. If you don't have children, if you do, this makes sense to you. You cannot go on a hike without kids filling their pants with stuff, okay? That came out like I could mean a few different things, and I probably do, okay? But kids are going to fill their pockets, their pants, their overalls, all the stuff they have with stuff. You know, my kids collect everything, sticks, snake skin, squirrel pelts, okay? They're going to collect flowers and feathers and bits of bone and bark and bugs and bottles, okay? There's this one time we were hiking, actually just a little bit north of here, and Tegan came across in the woods. She found a bottle of Jack Daniels in the woods, okay? And since this is where we've always gone to church, you know, since she can remember, and we had that shirt once that kind of looked like a bottle of Jack Daniels, like a label of that, she picks it up and announces to the whole, like, hiking crew, everyone walking by, she's like, hey, Dad, look, a bottle of our church. How'd this get out here? And I'm just like, I don't know. The Lord works in mysterious ways, Tegan. Leave it there as an invite for someone else. Maybe they'll find their way to the bar. They just collect things, right? My kids collect all this stuff when we walk, and we begin entirely empty-handed. And by the time we get back to the car, we have armloads of crap. I mean, treasure, okay? That's what they call it, right? Everything's a treasure when you're a kid, okay? Like a used Kleenex is a treasure when you're a child, okay? Because everything my kids find on a walk, is astounding. It sparks wonder in their heart, and it can't be parted with, okay? It's invaluable, okay? I will never find a shred of bark this barky, okay? If I looked forever, all right, that's the way my kids think. So they have to keep it all, they have to carry it all. And so we just end up lugging all this stuff down these trails. And the longer and farther we walk, the more we're hauling with us. And it's inevitable that on these walks, one or both of my boys will eventually come across what is in their minds the greatest, most amazing rock they have ever seen in their entire lives, okay? And first of all, I'm kind of like, it's a rock, boys. There's a lot of them. You know what I mean? And it's never like a small rock. It's never a pebble. It's never just like, oh, look at this little heart-shaped rock that I could put in my pocket. It's always like huge. Okay. It's always something like this, you know, where, Zeke will be like, Dad, we have to bring this with us. Right. And this weighs more than, it's like an 85-pound rock here. This is the sort of thing like if you're in the mafia, you chain to someone to drown them in a river, right? Like, that's the kind of rocks my boys find. And they get all excited about it, and they're convinced that they need it. And so my boys were just like, you know, just leave it here. And they're like, they feel like insulted that I would even suggest that they leave this treasure behind. And so they just try and lug it with them. Their pants and pockets full of other kind of stuff. They're lugging this big rock along. And it's really funny to watch a little boy carry such a big rock, okay? One time we were walking, and Zeke has this giant rock that he's trying to carry, and he's just, you know, struggling through it all. And he's kind of a pudgy kid, but he's got like a really skinny butt, you know? And he wears a lot of hand-me-downs from his brother. And so he's walking, carrying this big rock, and we hear him behind. He's like, help, help! His pants have fallen down, but he won't give up the rock. You know, we're just like, just put the rock down, put your pants up. I can't! Help, help! And now he's just like waddling, you know, carrying this thing, just yelling the whole time. And of course, we don't help him. We just laugh at him, because that's the kind of family we are, especially my wife. If something funny happens, she's gone, okay? You're not going to get her for the rest of the trip. She's just going to laugh the whole time. And so eventually, you know, one of my boys will be carrying a huge rock like this, and they'll eventually get to that place where they're just like, Dad, can you please with a capital PW, can you please, can we just walk for me? Okay? And I'm a good dad. And so I say, no! And then I push him down a hill. You know what I mean? No, I don't do that. That's horrible. Some of you are like, yeah, who are you? Okay, you're messed up. No, I love my boys, and I love their sense of awe and adventure and exploration. And so I'm like, absolutely. And so I take the giant rock off their hands and, you know, pull up their pants or whatever else needs to be done for them at that moment. And we kind of continue on. But the thing is this, and I want you to write this down because this is going to be handy later. The thing is that the longer and farther you carry a rock that isn't yours, the heavier it gets, and the more depleted you become, and the more you start to think, there's like a limit to how long I can carry this thing. And then you start to get all frustrated and annoyed if you're me, and you're like, stupid kid, I don't want to carry this dumb rock, right? And you don't really think your kid is stupid. You're just bitter and angry, okay? You're frustrated, okay? It's that, like, the emotional and physical exhaustion starts talking on your behalf. But eventually you hit a wall during this hike. For me, it's usually about a half mile carrying this thing. When I start reflecting on my life and just thinking, this is not the way I want to live, you know, carrying this giant rock around, and I decide that, like, I can't do it anymore. And so the rock drops. I drop the rock. And my kids, generally, this is the part where they fall apart, okay? They lose it. You're just going to leave the treasure here. One time Zeke was like, there could be a dinosaur in there. That was his, like, excuse for needing to bring it with us. You never know when you might bring a rock home and a dinosaur just comes out. Like, in his mind, that's a real thing that could actually possibly happen. And I don't tell him no, because I just like the idea that that's where his brain is at. You get to this place where you're kind of just like, why am I still carrying this? And there's this kind of emotional explosion out of them, and then maybe out of you, because you can't do it anymore, and they want you to do it, but you can't, and it just can't be done. And the rock has to just stay where it is. And oftentimes there's a little tear in the relationship, like with my kids. Now they're kids, and so it doesn't last very long, but it's emotional and heated in the moment. And here's the thing. This is the reason why I tell you all of this. And some of you are wondering, like, why are you telling us all this? And the reason is this, because this happens in life. This happens in your life. I wonder if you ever feel like you just can't carry everything you're supposed to carry. Like, there just isn't enough time for everything. Do you ever have that feeling? I mean, like, you've got bills to pay and a business to keep afloat and debt to minimize and a team to manage and a mortgage and a 401k. And then you've also got family dinners and pool parties and ballet recitals and Little League games and date nights. And it's just so much stuff. And before you know it, like, your arms are completely full. It's like there's more things to put on the schedule than there is room on the schedule to put things. Ever had the realization that, like, you know, if I stayed at work just like tonight until everything got done, I would never leave work. You know, you ever have that feeling? There's just so much to do. But then on the other hand, sometimes you feel like, but then if I went home and I just stayed at home until everybody at home got everything they wanted and needed from me, if I waited and stayed at home until everybody's love tanks were full and my kids all got one-on-one attention from me doing their favorite thing and my wife and I had all the adult conversation that she's been missing out on during the daytime when she's with the kids and I got all the honeydew projects done, if I stayed at home until all the home stuff was done, I would probably never go to work. And so what do I do with this? Like, how do I navigate this tension? I'm not really sure what to do or which way to go. And I think a lot of us, including and maybe especially a lot of dads, can feel extremely overwhelmed by this tension. I wonder if you've ever had a time where you find yourself at work thinking about home, and then you get home and all you're doing is thinking about work. And like these worlds are just bleeding together, and it's difficult to know where to draw what lines. And I think we get to this place where we have to make a judgment call, a tough one, one that we oftentimes really don't feel all that equipped to make inside of our lives. And I don't know if you're like me, but I tend to kind of have this little conversation with God where I'm like, God, this is just too much. I mean, I can't carry all this. So I'll tell you what, I'll make a deal with you. And this is a bad idea just to try and make deals with God. God, you take care of like all the things at home, and I'll take care of all the stuff at work. So God, if you just kind of take care of the home stuff, then I'll go over here and I'll take care of all the work stuff, and we'll just make that deal, because like our arms are just so full. And so if you're like me, what we'll often do is we'll take the rock of relational responsibility, the wants and needs and expectations of our family, and we'll hand it off to someone else to carry. We give our spouse or like our kids this load that we're meant to carry but that we can't carry. And when we do, they don't usually like yell no and then like shove us down a hill, right? Like they take it. They accept it. They carry it for us because they love us and they want to support us. They're there for us. And that's the beauty of relationships, that you don't have to do this thing alone, that you don't have to carry everything by yourself, that when you really need someone to step up for you, that person is there. The problem is when we let the people in our lives carry that load and we never pick it back up. And we never take it back off their shoulders. We never take it back out of their hands. Because the real truth about life is this, that because the longer and farther you carry a rock that isn't yours, the heavier it gets. And the more depleted you become. And the more you start to think, there is a limit to how long I can carry this. And sometimes even though you love them, and you weren't opposed to helping out at first, you're just getting fatigued. And that fatigue of carrying the weight of that rock can lead to frustration or hurt and anger, sometimes bitterness and even contempt. And you start to wonder, like, don't don't they see how heavy this thing is? That while they're off doing that, like, I'm carrying all of this for them. Like, don't they see that, like, I need, when are they going to, how long is this going to be? Like, when are they going to help out? When are they going to take it back? And I think, like a lot of things, this can be kind of hard to see in the mirror. I mean, like, how do you know? And maybe some of you are wondering this right now. Maybe some of you are just eating steak and have tuned out already. But maybe you're wondering, like, how do you know if you've handed someone a relational rock that's too heavy for them, that they've been carrying so long that it's starting to kind of hurt things between the two of you? What does that look like? And it looks like this. And I just want to give you a couple things that I think this kind of narrows down to. A little kind of self-diagnosis test. I think it looks like this. It looks like constantly repeating promises to do better. Constantly repeating promises to do better. Honey, it's going to change. I'm sorry. I mean, it's just a season. Just a little bit longer, okay? And like, she's crying, and you're trying not to cry, and you're trying to be tough, and neither one of you kind of wants life to kind of function the way it is, but like, you know, then you come home late again, and you feel bad about it, but you overscheduled again, and you prioritize that person or that meeting or that situation above them again, and you shouldn't have, and it's kind of wrong, but you apologize, and then you promise, and you promise, and you promise, and nothing changes, and nothing changes, and nothing changes. And how we justify it is we kind of show up every now and again and just kind of check on the rock. Like, hey, you okay carrying that? You're doing such a good job. Oh, man, I don't know where I would be without you carrying this rock all by yourself to help me out. Here's some flowers. You can do it. The second thing is this. I think this looks like being chronically absent from important events. Being chronically absent from important events. Like you miss another game, another recital, another anniversary, another birthday party, again and again and again. And I'm sorry, and I'll make the next one, and I'll be there next time, and it's going to happen then. And every time you just, something keeps coming up. You just can never seem to make it, to be there. And the third thing is this, pointing to the future to make up for the past. Pointing to the future to make up for the past. It's gonna get better. Next time, next month, okay? In a couple years, okay? We'll just at once, you know, in the future, that'll be, and then I'll make it all up. Next Christmas is gonna be, next spring, next birthday, okay? The next one, that's in the future, okay? I mean, you know, I missed this time, and I know I did it again, but like next time is going to be so much different than last time because I'm gonna be there for that. And if this is your life, you've handed someone a burden that they weren't meant to carry for very long. And eventually, their mental willingness to carry your load will be overcome by an emotion and emotional and sometimes physical inability to carry it any longer. And they will eventually drop the rock. And I think it's always interesting, like, when the rock drops between people. For men, if you're a guy in here, hopefully you're aware of that. But for men, I think a lot of us, like, we look at that moment and we kind of isolate the moment inside the moment because we're very kind of sectioned off thinkers, and we compartmentalize a lot of things. And we're kind of looking at the moment and we're just, like, mystified by what actually happened when the rock dropped. We're like, all I said was, pass the ranch. And she freaked out, okay? Like, she started crying and I was like, what's wrong with ranch? You know, I wasn't really sure what was going on. And she like ran in the other room and she was all angry. And I didn't know what was happening. Like all I did was just give her a courtesy call. Okay. To let her know I was going to be 5 minutes late. And then she hung up the phone and I guess packed up her stuff and then left me a note saying I need some space because she was gone when I got home. And I was like, I gave you space. I gave you 5 minutes of space, to be exact, because that's how much time I was late getting there. I mean, all I said was, I'll be there, but probably just at like the, like towards the end of the recital. Okay, like when does he go on? Like, because I'm gonna probably just show up, and then in the back, and there's like, yeah, you know, and but like manly, like yeah, and then I'll take a picture, but then I gotta go back to the thing, and then like maybe later on, I'll just be like, yeah, buddy, I saw you. This is the iPhone proves it, you know, and like when is that? That's all I said, and then you know, the next thing I know, I come home and she's in the room with the door and it's locked, and she's listening to music. And it's Sarah McLachlan, which is never good. And she's crying, and there's a puppy in there, and she won't talk to me. You know, it's like all I said was that, I mean, all I did was this thing. We don't understand that it wasn't necessarily that thing, but it was that that thing was one more thing shoved into the arms of someone who's already been carrying far too much for far too long. When the rock drops, grades plummet. Intimacy bottoms out. Work takes a hit. You don't want to come home after work right away. Like when you hear the garage door coming up, there's that little thing inside of you that's like, oh, we're going to fight again. There's that thing in which she tells you like, oh, you know, work called and I have to go on this trip and it was unexpected. I'm so sorry. You're going to have to take care of the kids. And you expect for him to be upset or disappointed or sad, but instead there's this little flint of joy in his eyes because things are a little bit better when you're not around. Sometimes when the rock drops, there's irreparable damage. Sometimes it signals the end of a relationship. Sometimes, like Humpty Dumpty, not all the pieces can be put back together again. It just doesn't work out. I'm not calling your wife Humpty Dumpty. I'm just saying the situation itself. Sometimes it can take like a season or even years to repair the broken trust because it was your rock to carry, but you handed it off to someone else because you had something else to do, and you let them carry it for just a little bit too long. Now, I just want to say, now that we're all feeling really awesome and optimistic inside, happy Father's Day! I just want to say, I understand why this happens. This actually makes a ton of sense why a lot of us end up in this place. And let me just tell you why. And I think especially if you're a lady in here, this would be really good for you just to like turn on your listening cap. Is that a real thing? I think I just made that up. The reason why this happens is because we love progress. We love it. And when I'm at work, I can measure progress. When I'm at home, I'm just at home, right? I mean, like, I'm just kind of there. Like, if I stay at work an extra couple of hours, I can get something done, okay? I can check some boxes and complete some tasks and send some emails and make some calls and file some TPS reports, okay? I can wrap up some projects, like, and then, like, if I go home, whoa! Somebody really wanted their wife to hear what I was just saying. And how they're like, let's fade that one up a little bit. Can we just backtrack and repeat? Babe, okay. When I go home, I'm just home. I mean, like, there's not a lot of promotions to receive at home. I don't know if you've noticed this. Like, it's kind of hard to climb the ladder at home. You know, I'm going to be honest with you guys. My wife hasn't given me a promotion in 13 years, okay? 13 years of it. She's never once sat down and just sat across from me with her folder that she grades me on. And I know she's got it, okay? And just been like, you know, I just want you to know, Mr. Smith, that we in upper management, which is myself and a few close friends and, of course, my mom, we want you to know that we're very pleased with your performance. There have been some hiccups, but you've really done well. And according to this report, we'd love to promote you from dad to super dad. And so here's the company keys to the Corvette, right? Like, that's never happened. Never. I've never gotten a plaque from my mother-in-law, okay? just to let me know how amazing I am. Like, never, I mean, like, I'm really fuzzy on the home incentive program. I'm not really sure how it works. At work, I get it. But, like, at home, like, I mean, I can put in all the time I want at home, and, like, it's never going to result in me making more money or being able to go on an extra vacation or pay for it. I mean, like, I've never gotten a bonus. You know, I've never gotten the, like, the, you know what, we didn't really expect for you to make those repairs on the car yourself. Here's a little something for you, you know? That's never happened at my house. Like, I've never gotten a raise. I've never gotten an award. There's no trophies in my house with my name on it because of the stuff I've done at home. Like, there's no meetings that, like, you know, are called at my house where like, Zeke gets everybody in the kitchen and is just like, hey, everybody, gather around. I just want to make a quick announcement. We've all been a part of this company. We've seen what's going on here. And the only reason we closed last quarter ahead is we beat Buzz because of three letters, D-A-D. Let's give it up. And everybody just claps, you know, and everybody's like, dad, 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 dad. And I'm like doing my dad dance, you know what I mean? That never happens, okay? Like, they're at work, you know, my expertise is appreciated. It's honored, but like at home, to be honest, half the time, I feel like I don't know what the heck I'm doing. I just feel like I have no idea how to do what's expected of me. I don't always know how to be awesome. I'm not sure what the win looks like. I mean, how do you tangibly track progress in relationships? How do you do that? Now, ladies, I just want you to know that, like, every man in the room right now, including yours, is like, he gets me. That's it. And part of the reason why we're like this is because God made us that way. Okay? God made us to want to push things forward, to want to make progress, to want to create and contribute, to want to throw our weight behind growing and improving and expanding things, to conquer, to provide, to like have this hunger deep within us to work hard and to make it be about something significant, to be remembered. And you know what? That's not a bad thing about the man in your life. God loves progress, but when it gets out of control, when working, when making a name for yourself, when like hitting that certain financial goal that you've had for so long, when pursuing that promotion or building that business begins to compete with the fundamental things, the important things, the significant things, the relational things, that's when there's a problem. So what do we do with that tension? What are we supposed to do with that rock? I mean, how do we know what choices to make? How do we know how to maintain some sort of balance? How do we know what to carry when? And I want to read you a single scripture today, just one sentence, because I want you to feel the full weight of it. There's some weeks where we go through an entire chapter, we find ourselves kind of exploring all throughout the Bible, but today I just want to focus on just one sentence, and I want it to get stuck in your head. I want you to memorize it. I want it to become a prayer that echoes deep within your heart, that you think about as you're driving to and from work, that comes up when you make plans, when you're making out your schedule, when you're thinking about what to do and what to choose and what order to put things in your life. And it's this. It comes from this poem that's written by Moses. He's this figure in Jewish history that lived a lot of life. In fact, this guy lived to be 120 years old. That's a lot of life, okay? For those of you that have kids that think, you know, you're 35 and they think you're an old timer, 120 people, okay? That's big time up there. And he had an incredibly long and rich life. Like he was adopted by Pharaoh. He lived in the palace. He was of the richest of the rich. He had people catering to his every need. He had servants. Then he kind of fell out of favor with Pharaoh's family because, you know, he murdered somebody. You know, some people end a relationship over anything. You know what I mean? It's like, what's the big deal? So they get mad at him, and he goes on the run. He becomes a shepherd, and it's a little bit different pace. And he's just kind of, he's poor. I mean, he's sitting out. He takes the sheep out. He sits there. They baa. They poo. They eat grass. He takes them back. Rinse and repeat, like the same thing, just over and over again. For 40 years, he does this, okay? Just that. And he has no idea, like, the arc of his story. Like, this could be all that there is, just sitting with sheep. Then like God appears to him and through this bush and inspires him to go back, and he rescues the people of Egypt. It's the whole like let my people go, and then there's like the frogs and the river of blood and all that kind of madness happens, and now he's God's mouthpiece, and he becomes this leader of all of these people, and he takes them from this place of captivity to this place of freedom. He sets out on this journey to like God knows where, literally like only God knows where they're going. This place called the Promised Land, and they have no directions, no map, and everybody's looking to Moses, and Moses never really wanted to be a leader. He just wanted to be a guy, you know, and suddenly all this is on his back, and he begins wandering around with these people for years and years and years. 120 years this guy lives. And this is what he has to say about life and the allocation of our time. It's in a poem in the book of Psalms chapter 90, verse 12, and this is what he says. He says, teach us to number our days so that we may truly live and achieve wisdom. Teach us to number our days so that we may truly live and achieve wisdom. And this is a piece of poetry that really is a prayer. It's this desperate cry of a man who knows what it feels like to be swamped with responsibility, to have a season in which there's not a whole lot going on, and then to have the next season be so overwhelming you think you'll never survive it. To literally have thousands of people wanting his attention and time and input and one-on-one time and to speak to this and give wisdom about this and be with us here and make this happen and just feeling torn between all of these different things. And this is the prayer that radiates from his heart in this moment. Teach us, God, to number our days so we may truly live and achieve wisdom. And what he's really saying is this: life is short. It doesn't go on forever, and you only get one of them. Like, don't live life at such a zoomed-in macro level where all you're really doing is just trying to tackle the next problem, the immediate issue, the current frustration right in front of you. Live with a larger sense of perspective, because you can go your whole life and never truly live because you spent too much time carrying the wrong rock. Teach us to number our days so that we may truly live. Live life to the full. Have a sense when we look back on the life we've lived that, yeah, I didn't do it perfect, but I think I did it right. Most of us, we don't do that, though. We kind of spend our days as if they're just never going to end. They're never going to run out. We have unlimited refills somehow. Like, we spend our time as if we're always going to have our kids. They're going to be around forever. They're going to be at home forever. They'll probably be this age for eternity. And although intellectually we know that's not true, oftentimes we treat our life and budget our time as if that's such. As if we're always going to have our health. As if we're always going to have our parents, as if they'll never someday die. And some of us this year found out that that's just not true. The time is short. We spend our time as if like our spouse is always going to just be there. And we can get to him or her later, as if we have this infinite supply of days. And so we cram it all in and we try and carry it all, and it just can't be done. Whether or not you realize it or accept it, your days are numbered. So use them wisely. Another way to say it would be this: your time is limited. So you need to limit the way you spend your time. Your time is limited, and so you need to limit the way you spend your time. You cannot do it all. So do what matters most, and let the other rocks drop. There's this this famous blogger, and she's from Australia, the home of the Sydney Opera House, and more importantly, Jono. And she's a hospice worker, and she would spend time with people during the last moments of their life. And so she would be called in as a worker when people were terminal, when they only had between 3 and 12 weeks to live out their final days. My grandpa died recently, and that's what they called hospice in, to sit and to be with and to take care of him during the last few moments of his life. And that's what this woman did for a job for many, many years. And as she spent time with them, she would just talk. And one of the questions she got in the habit of asking them was, do you have any regrets? I mean, now that we both know that you're sitting at the end of your life, that we literally pretty much know the number of days you have left, do you have any regrets? And as she began over the years just to write down in her journal the things that these people would say to her as they're getting ready to pass away, as they're facing their life down, as they're looking over the way they've lived and reflecting on everything they've done and who they've been, she began to notice patterns. And this is information that would take you a lifetime to obtain. And yet she placed it all in a blog that I'm sure will eventually become a book. And I want to give you not all of these things, but just the top two, because I think they're really fascinating. And I think zooming out and thinking about this perspective, fast-forwarding your life to the end and asking the questions, would that be something that I would say in the end? I think it helps us to know how to make the most of the time that we do have. And the second most thing that she heard from people, the second biggest regret they had as they were dying was this: I wish I hadn't worked so hard. I wish I hadn't worked so hard. This is what she said about it. This is straight from her blog. This came from every male patient that I nursed. They missed their children's youth and their partner's companionship. Women also spoke of this regret, but as most were from an older generation, many of the female patients had not been breadwinners. All of the men I nursed deeply regretted spending so much of their lives on the treadmill of work existence, without exception. That's fascinating to me and a little bit scary, because that's my tendency. Men, this means that, like, if you don't number your days, you won't invest your time where you wish you would have, and you will have regret. And once you realize it, at the end, you can't go back. You can't do it over. You can't do it differently. And the number one thing that people said in terms of what they regretted at the end of their life was this: I wish I'd had the courage to live a life true to myself, not the life others expected of me. I wish I'd had the courage to live a life true to myself, not the life others expected of me. She wrote on her blog that this was the most common regret of all. When people realize that their life is almost over and look back clearly on it, it's easy to see how many dreams have gone unfulfilled. Most people have not honored even a half of their dreams and had to die knowing that it was due to the choices they'd made or not made. Listen to this. I think this is so profound. Health brings a freedom very few realize until they no longer have it. I think a lot of times we find ourselves pursuing certain things and wrapping our time up in certain endeavors because we feel that's just the way it has to be. That's what's expected of me. That's what I've got to do. That's what everybody, I got to keep up. If I don't do this, I won't measure up. I won't. And yet we find ourselves looking back and wishing that we would have been true to the things that were really valuable to us, to the people that were most valuable to us. And so what should you do with the limited time that you have? Well, I can tell you this, and this is the biggest thing I would say that I would hope you take away from this morning. It's this. You will only ever be as happy as your relationships are healthy. You will only ever be as happy as your relationships are healthy. I'll just tell you from my own life, as good as I hope I am at what I do, as much as I value my work, as much as I love this church and I love building it and I want to do it well and I want to impact people's lives, I really, if I'm honest, I really only have two unique roles in this life. The first is a husband to Gretchen. Not the first husband to Gretchen, but the first thing. I mean, maybe, I don't know, because I eat a lot of cheese, but like, you know, it's just, that's the top priority, is to be a husband to Gretchen. And the second role that's unique to me is this, a father to my children, to Tegan, Cohen, and Ezekiel. Everything else in my life, somebody else can do, if I'm really honest about it. And here's the thing, we've all talked to somebody who didn't invest in the right place. And then once they realized that they tried to put it all back together, what can I do? How can I make up for it? How can I fix it now that the rock has already dropped? And oftentimes by that point, they can't go back. It's too late. Too much damage has been done. Too much has happened. Because you can't go back. Your kids are only toddlers once. There's only one first T-ball game. There's only so many years of ballet recitals, unless it gets weird, okay? There's only one first grade awards ceremony. There's some things that you just can't go back and make right. And I would just tell you this morning, and when I speak to you, I'm speaking to myself, because if I just be honest to you, this is tough for me. Why can I get inside of like your man's head? Because I think the same way, because my default settings are the same. But I would tell you the same thing I think God wants to speak to me today. And it's this, don't trade what's unique to you for something someone else can do. Don't trade what is unique to you for something someone else can do. Zoom out. Pray that God would teach you to number your days so that you may live, you may truly live and achieve wisdom. And this may require you to draw some new boundaries in your life or to reinforce some existing boundaries that you've kind of got lax on. My prayer would be that your conversation with God wouldn't look like, God, you take care of things at home and I'm going to go to work. But that we would begin living from a place of, God, you're going to have to take care of things at work because I'm going to take care of things at home. God, I gave my 45 hours and I'm done. I'm going to be fully present with my family. They're the ones who go on the calendar first. They're the ones I build my life around, because when my life is over, I don't want to have any regrets. That's what I want to encourage you to do this morning. Either on the bottom of your note sheet, or if there's a spare one near you, or if you've used up all the note sheets, you know, you can just tattoo this on your arm or something, write it on your neighbor's neck, whatever you need to do. But I want you just to draw these four symbols, and they're this: a plus sign, a minus sign, a greater than, and a less than sign. And this is just a little homework assignment for you to take with you. And this is what I want you to spend some time doing this week. And you know what? I would love for this to be a greater conversation with you and your family. And here's what these things represent. when you look at your life, when you zoom out and realize that your days are numbered, that you don't have forever, that you want to use them wisely, that you want to truly live, what's something that you realize, I need to do, I need to add this to my schedule? This hasn't really existed, and I need to put this in there. Put that by the plus sign. See how that works? Plus, add this in there. It'll connect later. The minus sign is something that, like, you know what? If I'm honest, like, I need that needs to go away. That's something that I need to take out of my schedule. And that's probably one of the hardest ones for us. We love to put things in. If you're like me, you're probably not super good at taking things out. A conversation my wife and I have a lot is like, we're going to do this thing. What are we not going to do so that we can do that? And I'm like, well, let's do them all. Let's do everything, right? But life doesn't work like that. You only have a certain amount of time. So what's something that you need to take off your schedule because it's draining? Because it's not getting you where you want to go. And for some of you, if I could just be honest, it might be a person. Because that person is a time waster for you. Because that person is an energy drainer for you. Because that person pulls you away from the kind of person you want to be and the kind of life you want to live. Maybe it's an activity. Maybe it's what you do when you get home and instead of doing engaging with your family or your kids or homework or the things you need to be doing, instead it's that thing that you zone out and do that eats up so much of your life. I don't know what it is. The next one is that, I get it mixed up. Is that greater than or less than? Greater than? Like I said, the greater than sign, clearly, as we all can discern. What's something that you need to do more of in your life? Maybe there's a little bit of it in there, but like it's just, you know, to really be healthy and happy, to live with no regrets, to really get the most out of life, you need to add a little bit, you need to increase that in your life. Maybe you're just like, you know what? I find that like when I go to small group once every 2 months, it's really good for me. Maybe we could like turn that dial a little bit. Maybe it's, you know, a routine that has to do with your, maybe it's the way that you, your conversational patterns with your spouse. Like, man, when we sit down and share, when we talk about our, but when we actually do a date night, man, it's just so good. And we just kind of let it go. And then the next one is the less than sign, clearly. No one would ever get those mixed up. Is what's something that you need to minimize in your life? You've made it too big of a deal. And it needs to move downward. And I would encourage you to think about these things and to openly have this conversation with the people close to you in life. I think it would be interesting if you had kids to ask them these questions and see what they said. Hey, kids, what's something I should do more of? Wow. That'll be an interesting reaction right there. Hey, kids, is there anything that maybe I should do less of? You probably already know the answer to some of these, right? Let this be a piece of conversation around lunch tables today, around dinner tables throughout the week, around small groups, because I'll tell you that if you put some of this into practice, there will be things that will change about your life. And I pray that you will make this your prayer, that God, that you will teach me to number my days so that I may truly live and achieve wisdom. Would you stand with me across this room? I just want to pray for you, and then we're going to spend a few moments just singing a few songs together. And I'll just ask that you bow your heads and close your eyes. It's not more spiritual, it just helps you focus in this moment. And I just want to pray for you, because the truth of the matter is this. To make significant changes in our lives, many of us are in such a rut with how we've done relationships and how we've orchestrated our time, and we have this kind of conditioning to the way we do things, and it's going to be difficult, if not impossible, to break on our own. And we need to invite God in to the process, to invite God in to help push us forward, to give us the courage and the wisdom to know what decisions to make, how to organize our time. And I just want to pray that God would do that for you and your life. And that as you take it seriously, it would be a gift, a breath of fresh air, a sigh in your family. God, I pray for every person in this room. God, I pray for all those listening online via the podcast. God, so many of us, we feel torn between all these different things that need to be done in life. God, work expectations and things that we need to check off a to-do list and things we need to do to manage our house and keep things in line and keep our health in the right spot. And there's so many things that are tearing us in different directions. And a lot of times, God, we get lost in the midst of our own life. We're just doing stuff and there's no joy. There's no life in it. We're living, but we're not really alive. And God, I pray that this morning that you would help us to zoom out. God, to look at the context of our lives. God, that you would give us wisdom. God, that you would give us insight in knowing who we've given a rock to hold that strained the relationship. God, I pray that you would enable us to have conversations this week between husbands and wives, between kids and parents, God, even between coworkers and employers. God, I pray that you would give us the courage to begin to have some real conversations about where we put our time and where we put our attention and what gets our focus. And God, I pray that we would be a room full of people that as we're continually reminded by you about what is important, that we would align our lives with those things. Give us the help and the ability in Jesus' name. And everybody said, amen.